Ever notice how the smallest changes can make the biggest difference in your space? That's exactly what I realized with the Just Hang Squeegee from Dance Mode. It's sleek, minimal, and designed with a built-in hook, so you can hang it anywhere without any suction cups or adhesives. Plus, it's made from a single piece of high-grade silicone, so no scratches, no flimsy parts, just a smooth, streak-free finish on glass, mirrors, tiles, even car windows. Right now, it's on Amazon for $20.99, that's 30% off, plus an extra 10% off with code JUSTHANG. Just search Just Hang Squeegee by Dance Moon on Amazon to grab yours. And you'll also find the link in the episode description. Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. Today, we have a guest that I don't think we have ever had a chef on the show. So, how is your day going and, you know, just how are you?
I'm great, man. Great. Yeah. And I'm not a real chef, just to clarify for the audience. I'm, you know, I've had some success in the food industry, but I had no experience in the food industry prior to putting some sauce into a jar and getting it into grocery stores. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess that makes you a professional, like a literal professional, right?
Yeah, I'm a food entrepreneur. Yeah, I mean, call me a chef is a stretch.
Got it. And where are you based out of, and then what's your story?
So I am here in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm originally from New Haven, Connecticut, but I moved down south when I was about 33 years old, so 2014. And, you know, at that time, I was in the music industry. I was in contention for a Grammy nomination back in 2017 for Best New Rock Artist. I got hit by a truck during the voting process, had two spinal surgeries, got hooked on painkillers, got into an altercation after a night in the bar, where I got charged with attempted murder, and then got a series of other charges, found faith, got sober, and started this Italian specialty food company out of nowhere. Then I wrote a book, and now it's being converted into a film series.
Nice. I mean, I wanted to say that your story does sound like a movie, or at least a web series, right?
Yeah, my whole life, exactly like you said, it's been cinematic. I mean, I was kidnapped in the Bahamas at the age of 21. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a lot of near-death experiences. I survived. Obviously, I'm here for a reason. But yeah, it is very theatrical. And this book series will show that for sure.
And when is it coming out?
So the first book was a...
On the Stone?
No. I'm working with producers and directors right now. We still have a lot of work to do. The first book is done. That was published on May 30th, From Bars to Jars. And then the second book is nearly done. It's like 80% done. I've got about 100 more pages to write. So the first one is nonfiction. The second one is fiction. It's just like a continuation using that first book as the backstory. And but then it gets crazy, you know. It's like spiritual warfare. It's like conspiracy drama taking place on this farm that I'm in the process of buying. So a lot of it is really, you know, it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say made you survive all that and more?
What made me write it?
Yeah, but also mainly what made you survive all that, right? What was like the core?
So, you know, God has been in my life my whole life, whether I believed it or not. He was there watching out for me because he had a purpose for me that I wasn't aware of until kind of recently. You know, and I had enough pain and enough heartache and trauma where I finally, you know, had to surrender and be like, you know, I can't control everything in this world, you know, which I thought I could. You know, I thought I was smart enough to overcome everything with my mind, you know, but I needed a spiritual solution that I didn't realize.
Got it. And sorry. Yeah, and at what point, because you said, you know, you did go spiritual, right? So at what point you were like, okay, now it's time to actually admit that I'm not that smart and, you know, like choose God.
So I was in a jail cell. I had about 10 days locked up, and that kind of broke me. This was like the fifth time I've been arrested, but this specific time nobody would bail me out now. I burnt all my bridges. And now I was completely backed up against the wall, and I got on my knees and I said, God, please, if you're out there, if you're listening, I need help. I'll do anything you want me to do. I just want to turn my life around and contribute to life in a positive way instead of causing all this harm and everything,
Got it. And what was your kind of, I would say the steps, right, that you took towards, you know, cleaning up your life? And but, you know, more importantly, what was your moment of realization that I have, you know, I messed up, right? Because I guess that's the most hard part for most people, right, to admit that, you know, they kind of messed up.
So I've had a problem with alcohol and drugs, since a very young age, since like 13 years old. I would say I was a full-blown alcoholic by the age of 18. And just didn't know it. And then I had a couple suicide attempts, and I was in the psych ward a few times. And then I got introduced to a spiritual program of recovery that I theoretically I liked it, and I was able to get sober in short periods of time. But because I wasn't fully willing to commit to the practices of that spiritual life, I kept on relapsing. So for like 15 years, I was in and out, in and out, and then the consequences started getting more severe. I lost my kids, got divorced, then got remarried, and then all the arrests started happening. And the bottom line is, I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I had to give up that self-will, and I was always seeking self-interest, and what it did was put me in a constant state of conflict with everything and everybody around me. I got It was unbearable to live with me at the end there.
So, you know, like I am guessing that a lot of, you know, listeners that who are actually listening to the show, right, might be going through shit, right, in their lives. And, you know, and do you think your life kind of provides them a scale of, okay, these are the things that can go wrong, right, but you can still, you know, choose the right path?
I mean, everybody is redeemable, and help is available to anybody that seeks it. And I'm not gonna get on here and say there's only one way to do this. Not one denomination, not one organization has a monopoly on recovery, and redemption. I choose to look towards God, the Alpha and the Omega, the creator of heaven and earth, and then specifically Jesus Christ. I repented and I profess my love to Jesus Christ. And that has worked for me. And there's a program of recovery, a 12-step program that I belong to, and I'm not going to mention the name, but it is easily searchable. So if you do have a problem with alcohol or drugs, there is help 24/7. But it's going to require some things. There's some rules that we're going to have to follow, and we have to try our hardest to, I have to try my hardest to align my will with what God would have me do, which are practice these spiritual principles and virtues like love, patience, kindness, tolerance, compassion. And I have to be constantly thinking of others more than I'm thinking about myself.
Yeah, but would you also say that acceptance, right? Like accepting that, okay, maybe I do need help, and actually seeking out help is like a big feat of achievement, right? At least at the beginning.
I mean, well, it all starts with humility, like admitting I have a problem, admitting I need help. I mean, that's in essence, that's humility. And I have to constantly be seeking humility as a way of life and character building in order for me to recover and have a life worth living, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because even if you look at today's environment, right? Like most of the stuff is, I would say, designed to hate each other and tear each other down, right? And
yeah.
Especially when you look at social media, everybody is portraying this perfect lifestyle, right? Like, and it's like there are no cracks and there is no room for error anymore, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's kind of like shitty, or do you think that kind of affects people going through stuff? Because, you know, like they think everybody else is like, you know, like superstars and shining, right?
Right. You know, and I felt victim of this for a long time too, is like, I compare my insides with people's outsides. You know, I'm constantly comparing, which generates envy and jealousy. But I've learned to fail in public. I don't hide anything. You know, I'll post about the good things and I'll post about the bad things. You know, I will tell where I have failed. You know, I will tell the world, because here's the thing, those experiences, what may sound like a failure can benefit others. It may help somebody to avoid the pitfalls that I fell into, you know?
Yeah. And what's your favorite kind of storytelling?
Favorite kind of storytelling? I mean, I like to add humor into it.
Jokes, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, humor, right?
And, you know, like you're going to make movies and stuff, right? And I'm pretty sure you're also spreading the message on social media. So what's your kind of favorite storytelling? What's your go-to tools, right, when you want to convey a message?
Yeah, you know, the different types of media, there's a lot of variables. You know, you have to constantly be mixing it up. For social media, let's say, right, there's all different, you know, ways to portray the message. And for me, I try to mix it up. I try to do a little bit, you know, a little bit in text, a little bit with graphics, a little bit with video, you know, a little bit, you know, go live, you know, and give the world a taste of things as they're happening, you know. But as far as the movie and the film series, this is going to be, you know, we already have about two seasons lined up and outlined based off these two books. And it's like, you know, have you ever seen The Chosen or Ozark or Yellowstone?
Yes.
Okay, so you're familiar with those. This story, From Bars to Jars, which is the working title is The Harvest, it takes elements from all three of those shows and kind of melts them together. So it's mm-hmm. a lot of tension like Ozark. The land is vast like Yellowstone. The characters have, you know, there's multiple point of views. And there's spiritual warfare. So each character has this inner conflict with their higher power, their creator, their God, whatever, you know? So it's a lot of serious topics, but it's also funny too. We add humor to it because, you know, if I didn't laugh about some of this stuff in my life, I'd be crying all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like, there is a quote, right, that says, life only makes sense backwards, but you have to live it forwards, right?
Right, yeah, I like that. Definitely.
So would you say, like, when you look at your life and, you know, what you have accomplished or in trying to accomplish, right, what is your kind of, I would say, observation about life that you would tell others?
Don't take yourself so seriously, you know? Mm-hmm. It is serious, but it's not. You know, you have to... And then look, if you can't find the blessing in situations, look for the lesson. You know, what seems on the outside as like a catastrophe, there's a nugget of wisdom in that situation that is actually wisdom. You know, you learn from these things, you know, and then do your best not to repeat the same mistakes.
I mean, I agree on the first part where you said, you know, like, don't take yourself seriously, right?
Yeah. Because life has got to be fun. Right. It's got to be fun, too, you know?
And also it's interesting that people learn and, you know, kind of go through their best development phase in the hardest times.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my suffering is when I got closest to God, you know, and then things started to ease up, you know, there was resolve.
Yeah. But would you say that you developed a lot of skills and just, I would say, confidence through hard times?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, absolutely. I had to be conditioned, right? You know, the way that I was living life wasn't working. You know, I was facing calamity after calamity. Everything's burning around me, you know, and then I kind of went through the fire. And, you know, how are diamonds formed, you know, intense pressure. So it was either shape up or ship out, you know. I had to get my act together, and I did learn a bunch of skills, like, you know, patience, tolerance, kindness, love, humility, all those things. Honesty, you know, be open-minded, willing to do whatever it takes to just be a better person.
And if you had to, let's say, correct a young man, right, who's doing mistakes that you see are the patterns, right, which will lead to, I would say, shitty situations, right? What would you tell him, right? Because if you look at internet today, there is a lot of suggestions and advices from people who have not done shit or gone through stuff in life, right? But coming from your perspective where you went through actual bad things, right, and you're still trying to be a good human being, right, what would be your kind of, I would say, pointing out that says okay, you're doing it wrong?
So what I would say is I'm not going to criticize, condemn, or complain about what somebody else is doing, but I will walk with them and show them what I did, you know. I won't get on this like moral hilltop and speak down to somebody. I will walk shoulder to shoulder and live life together, you know, and they could see how I would handle things when things come up in my life, you know, and, or me sharing my experience, like what I went through, what happened, and what it's like now. That is the best thing I could do to teach somebody, you know. But I'm not going to give advice. I'm not going to advise anybody, you know. I may say something like, have you ever considered doing it this way? You know, have you ever considered, instead of saying, you got to do this, you should do this. I can't force it on anybody, you know, but if somebody is willing, right, if somebody is willing and wants to learn and get better, I will stand in the fire with them, you know.
Got it. So let's talk about your book and, you know, how you wrote it, right? Because you lived all this, right? Then you decide to write a book. What was your initial struggle? Because I imagine putting words to like feelings and the situations that you went through, you know, must have been a process of more discovery, right?
Sure. Yeah. You know, so thankfully I've been writing songs since I was like 15 years old and maybe even earlier. So I've developed that skill of conveying messages and emotions with words, right? But this was different. This is a novel, and it's nonfiction, you know. So it was harder to write this than anything else I've ever written because it's so raw and honest, and it. And on the same token, it's therapeutic and cathartic. It was necessary for me to tell this story for myself, and then for anybody that might read this and maybe gain some inspiration or hope out of it.
So when you started writing your book, right, were there moments when you had a kind of fade in your memory? Like you're like, okay, what exactly happened? You know, like I need to actually think about it, you know, before I put it into words.
Yes, absolutely, man. So it's a memoir, right? It's not word for word exactly what happened. Some of it is to the best of my knowledge. A lot of it, you know, may be off here or there, you know. It's essentially a timeline, you know. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's somewhat accurate. You know, my wife read it and she's laughing because she's like, it didn't happen exactly like that. You know, I'm like, well, it's too late now. I'm not going to unpublish it, you know?
Yes. Yes. that's something I see with most of the authors, right? Like, you know, because, you know, we have this kind of, I would say, our brain fills a lot of empty places, right? With pure imagination, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess as an author, you know, you must have really struggled and wrestled with it and to stay true to the facts.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I was drunk half my life, you know? So my best recollection was vague at best, you know? I wasn't fully even there. A lot of the stuff had to be told to me after the fact, like, hey, do you know you did this? I'm like, oh, really? Shit. Okay.
You know, my bad. You know, I just remembered it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And how much time did it take to actually write the book?
It was over the course of about 7 months. Mm-hmm. You know, 7 months. I had an outline. I first wrote the outline and kind of put like key points in order, in chronological order, to kind of just shape it, you know. And then I started filling it in. Originally, I was going to write this book just about the food industry, just about like teaching somebody how to get into grocery stores with their food products. You know, that was the whole concept originally. But then as I started writing that, I'm like, well, for me to explain this, I got to go back to the beginning and how I was able to develop these skills and courage to be able to approach this industry with no experience, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's all about perspective, right? Like perspective of you, but also like, did you get to interview your own friends?
I mean, there are friends of mine in this book that are mentioned and certain things that, you know, certain things that we went through together, you know, it's in the book. Yeah. My wife too, you know, my wife is the main character of this book, you know, beside me, because she saw it all firsthand. So a lot of this stuff is really from her perspective, you know?
Yeah. So did you have like informal interviews with your friends just to check, dude, did this actually happen, or, you know, how did it go down?
No, I mean, because those parts in the book are very small. You know, I did, you know, have some friends that were mentioned in the book read it afterwards, and they're like, oh my god, yeah, I remember that, you know, that, and they're just honored to have been included in the story, you know. But it's mainly just me, my kids, my wife, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you also spoke about the second book, right? Now, mm-hmm. That you are an established author, right? Established author, because you already have a book. Do you think,
yeah,
there is more expectations?
So this one, no, I don't think so, because the first one is essentially nonfiction. It's a memoir. And the second book is fiction, and it gives me creative liberty to kind of just go off and kind of showcase my imagination. You know, I think there's a lot of hype right now and momentum built up because of the first book. So I think the anticipation is definitely greater for this second book, because nobody even knew I was writing the first book, but now they know that the second book is coming. So yeah, there is some expectations. Yeah, of course.
Hmm. And also, do you think there is some kind of heat from the fact that you're making a show out of it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. That, I mean, that's been in the media, and, you know, now talking with the producers and the directors who have read both the first book and what I've written on the second book, they're very excited. They could totally see. And in the second book too, the style of writing kind of changed, because I had cinema in mind. I had TV in mind.
Yes,
so, exactly. So I wrote this essentially, you know, for that shock value, you know?
Yeah. I imagine that, because I think when you held your pen, you know, you must be in a movie set, right? Like thinking from a production perspective.
Yeah, I'm trying to think ahead. Yeah. Which has been a mistake. Thinking ahead has been a mistake of mine my whole life. And then especially with the food business, You know, I was not thinking ahead when I started. You know, I was just doing it out of necessity. You know, it's like, okay, I guess we're doing this, so I better figure this out. But I didn't plan ahead. Like, what happens if this sauce that I'm making takes off in these stores? You know, how am I going to scale this business? I was not prepared, and it actually, you know, created a lot of problems.
You know, I'm sure when you started out your sauce business, there must have been like shit ton of competitors, right?
Competitors, competition,
Yes.
is that what? So
Yes.
actually, me being in the South, Italian food is very rare. So in South Carolina, I'm like one of the only sauce manufacturers, spaghetti sauce manufacturers. So there
Nice.
wasn't really the competition I'm going against are these national brands who I'm stealing market share from them, and they don't even know because I'm in a market that they're not paying attention to. I'm in their backyard selling a bunch of sauce, even outselling some of these other brands, and they haven't noticed yet. Or maybe they have, I don't know.
Maybe they have. Who
Maybe.
knows, right?
Right.
So, what was the original crack that, or you know, the niche that you found within the sauce industry, right? To even begin with, take a decision. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, make sauce.
Yeah, so being of service to my group of recovering alcoholics, I brought some spaghetti and meatballs to this meeting, and somebody says, more than one person said, this is the best sauce I've ever had. And this is the sauce that I grew up with my whole life. So to me, this is normal. This is the quality that I'm used to, right? Well, in the stores, in the grocery stores with mass production, and the focus is not on quality, it's on costs, it's on low costs, you know, and the stuff that I'm up against on the shelves is a lot of cases bioengineered. It's cooked for like 20 minutes, water and tomato flavoring, you know, it's not even real, you know. So this sauce here that I'm making, I'm cooking it for 7 hours, and I'm using all natural ingredients. It's healthy, you know, there's no bullshit in it, there's no chemicals, it's real, you know. So, and that's what set me apart in the stores.
Was there a kind of resistance when you hit stores initially?
You know, so because I have a premium product, it's at a premium price. You know, it's the most or the second most expensive sauce you could buy in the store, you know, like $9.99. So some of the objection was price, but once they taste this, you know, I started doing product demonstrations in the stores, you know, giving out free samples. And once they tried it, they don't even care what the price is. It's like, because it's the quality, you know what I mean? That's what they're paying for. And they want that, the healthy additive, you know, the healthy benefits.
And for how many years have you been in that business?
So June 1st, 2024 was my first sale. So just over a year, not that long.
Got it. And how much like bullshit did you have to deal in the first year of the business?
Man, it was intense. It was intense. So many different regulations and hoops I had to jump through. And then, you know, once, so within 2 months, I had about seven stores already, right? Which was probably too many to manage because, you know, now I'm cooking third shift. I'm doing everything by hand, pouring the sauce by hand, wrapping the jars with labels by hand, and then packing up my little Honda Civic and now delivering, you know, 20 cases all across the state of South Carolina. You know, so the more I had to deliver, the less time I could be in there cooking. And then, you know, within 6 months, I had 15 stores, and it just wasn't working anymore because I couldn't keep up. And then in December, I got an order from 59 more stores. So I was like, how the fuck am I gonna do this? You know? And so that's when I was forced to scale, and I actually shut down the operation in February because I couldn't handle it.
What was the initial challenge? Do you think was it logistics or was it the processing part?
Logistics is the biggest challenge, you know, coordinating and because I can't be everywhere at the same time, and I'm one person. I didn't have, you know, I had my wife helping me in the kitchens on Sundays, but that was it. That's the only other person that was working for us. So it was very hard, organizing and getting the product out and then making sure that we're giving each store enough attention. I couldn't do it, especially the stores that were like 2 hours away. I gave them a lot less attention than the ones that were right in my, 15-mile radius.
So, like, once you started the sauce business, right, and you're also an author, are you, like, let's say when you start working, are you very good at compartmentalizing thought process?
So I use a lot of AI to help me. It's an app called Sintra, which has basically like 12 different robots in different departments. So I would use that a lot to organize and compartmentalize. Okay, the creative AI bot, okay, what are we doing for the book marketing today? Okay, what are we doing? Get the logistics bot. What are we doing for these stores? How can we scale without, putting out a bunch of money, So I would try to use that, lean on that,
Got it. What would you do without AI?
Or huh?
What could anybody do without AI, right?
I mean, if you're not using AI, you're at a disadvantage in business.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but that's what it's become. And we're at the beginning of this, really, what, the first beta came out 3 years ago, and
yeah.
It's learning right now. AI is learning right now as we speak, getting better and better and sharper and sharper,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You seem to have grip on a lot of things, right? Like business, authoring, production, technology, right?
Yeah.
What would you say to those people, who say I can't multitask or, I cannot like do two things at a time?
What would I say to them? Get some kind of robot. I mean, get AI. It's really a trained monkey could use it. I'm a knucklehead. Like I said in the beginning, I'm not that smart, but I do have experience in a lot of different areas. I have little knowledge on a lot of topics, But guess what? Any of those topics, I start typing into ChatGPT and he's giving me expert, the experts. So anybody can use it.
I mean, you are one of those rare business people who like AI.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I can see where it'll become a problem. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think a lot of industries are going to become obsolete because it could all be done by AI. Graphic design being one of them. Which sucks. I'm a graphic designer as well. But you know what? Fuck it. I'd rather this robot spit out something I could do, spit out something in 10 minutes and it takes me 2 hours.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I mean, I see this whole conversation about AI and stuff with business owners and they're kind of on the benches about it. They're like, maybe it might work. Like, and I think you have seen the, the internet bubble and, the domains and stuff. And I think that's what AI is going to be, right? Like, a lot of people are going to be left behind, as you said, because of that. Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of things are going to be, like, prevalent, right? For example,
mm-hmm.
creativity is still prevalent. Like, you cannot take away that.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be creative. You got to be creative and prompt these things to tell it what to do. You got to be creative in that sense.
Yeah.
The more creative your prompts are, the better the outcome is going to be. But, and at first I was really scared of AI. I was scared like everybody's going to lose their job and they're going to start weaponizing and, they're going to have robots killing people pretty soon, So I was afraid of it at first. But, man, once I just jumped in,
Yeah. I mean, maybe we still have time for that.
Right. Yeah.
Just maybe,
true.
Right.
Maybe.
You never know.
True.
Yeah. So, just looking at you as a person, right? What do you think people, would remember about you? Like, what is that one thing that's an X factor about you?
The resilience, It's like, no matter what, no matter how bad the things I faced were, I still got up and kept moving forward. So that perseverance, I think is one of my greatest assets, and then doing my best to repair the damages that I've caused. Like, it's a lifelong journey now to repair the damage that I've done. I've done that much harm, especially to my kids and stuff like that. And I don't know if they'll ever forgive me, but I've made it my life mission to be somebody completely different than who I was back then, that somebody that they can be proud of,
And what would be your, I would say, the flow of knowledge that you would give somebody, right, who is trying to get clean and, keep going in their life, right? And I know there are a lot of people like that, and, unfortunately, humans have this tendency of self-pride where, they refuse to ask help for
Right.
the suffer, right? What would you tell them? Like, if there is a person standing in front of you, would say, "I don't want help. Like, I'm all right."
Yeah. I said, well, if you change your mind, here's my number. Give me a call. I think people need somebody that has been through it, that know that they have recovered, that have gotten to the other side of whatever that affliction is. If it's drugs or alcohol, they know, 'cause I tell them I was a fall down drunk, hopeless, and here I am with a life worth living, and I'm still making mistakes, but I'm trying my best. And when I do make a mistake, I admit it like instantly. I don't hold on to it. I say, listen, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. What can I do to make it better? But yeah, if there's somebody standing in front of me and they have a problem, but they don't want to admit it, I mean, I'll say, here, if you change your mind, here's my number. But whether they call, I don't know. It's up to them. I'm not going to chase nobody.
Yes. I mean, I think you're one of those people who realize that, people cannot be helped unless they want to be helped, right?
Yeah, exactly. For a long time, I refused to ask for help. I got this. Don't no, I got this. I'm smart, I'm strong, I could do anything I put my mind to. Well, no matter how much I thought, I could not get myself out of drug addiction and alcoholism. I had to be stopped by the forces to be.
And finally, if people want to, reach out to you or talk to you or even buy your book, where can they do that?
So, From Bars to Jars is on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart.com, any major online retailer. You could find my book. You could Google From Bars to Jars. You could Google Joe Gallagher Jr. You could Google Apostioli, and you'll see all kinds of stuff. And my number is public. It's on Google. So if anybody wanted to reach out, I answer all my texts, all my emails, unless it's spam or some bullshit. I'll be able to tell right away.
Nice. Yeah, any last words?
I just want to say thank you, man, for this little impromptu interview. I wasn't expecting to be on a podcast today.
Yes.
And this is great. It's been an awesome time. You're a great host, and I appreciate the work that you're doing, putting stories like this out there.
Thank you so much. And to my audience, like, this was not planned or, we don't even, rehearse or warm up, right? This was just like
Right.
shoot and go. And
Right.
I think we gave good quality, and a lot of people can learn from a story and maybe align their life better, right? And set themselves to be successful in the life. Yeah, and thank you so much, Joe, for being here. It was a pleasure talking to you. And to my audience, guys, this is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for being here. All of the Joe's link will be in the description, so go check him out. Maybe call him. Whenever you want to talk to him. Before he becomes famous from the series, you better give him a call and talk to him. And until next episode, thank you so much. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you. Blessings.